Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Today on Not Sam Wrestling, Booker T is joining us to talk about wrestling in a social media age, the way the younger guys treat the legends. Plus, we talk about everything that went down on Raw and SmackDown. We talk about Joey Ryan racking up YouTube views, AEW's coming to TV. This is Not Sam Wrestling.
This is Not Sam Wrestling.
Introducing your host from New York, here is Sam Roberts.
Oh, it feels good to be back in the Not Sam studio. Welcome to Not Sam Wrestling. What a show, what a show. We got Booker T on today's show. Booker T is so much fun to talk to because not only is he a legend with like this amazing career to reflect on, but he also stays so up to date with everything that's going on and always has an opinion on everything that's going on. It's just so fun to unpack what's going on in this world of wrestling with Booker T. And we're going to do just that here today on Not Sam Wrestling. We are back, thankfully, in the Not Sam studio on U.S. soil once again, although Montreal was a blast. And hopefully this week with no technical issues. I know a lot, and I mean a lot of you, had trouble downloading the podcast on Thursday last week. I apologize for that. There was a technical glitch. The YouTube feed worked. The SoundCloud feed worked. The NotSam.com feed worked. All that stuff. Those are all sources you can get the podcast for free. And it shouldn't have any technical issues ever any week. You know, I hate to be a shill for the shills, but the Patreon feed also no issues. And that comes out Wednesday afternoon, evening. So if you want the podcast early, you want to make sure you get it on time, you don't have to worry about anybody else, there's no ads, it's less than a dollar a week, patreon.com/notsamwrestling. Plus there's all kinds of bonus shows. We actually did a bonus post show from Smackville. Watch the Smackville special on the WWE Network, did a post show. That was at patreon.com/notsamwrestling this week. Sign up now for less than a dollar a week. You can get the audio of that. A little more, you get the video. A little more, you can get it live. A little more, there's merchandise. It's just something for everybody at patreon.com/notsamwrestling. So, you know, interesting thing, and we'll talk about it with Booker T this week. Of course, we're going to talk about Raw and SmackDown and a whole bunch of stuff on the state of wrestling after we talk to Booker T. But Renee Young was a big part of the online conversation this week because people were, you know, tweeting her that she sucks on commentary or whatever, and she responded with the heel Seth Rollins response of, but I still got money, though. Actually, she wasn't even bragging about her money. She was like, but the check's still clear. And somebody took great offense to that. They're like, you know, that's what made Seth Rollins so unlikable, as he was bragging about his money. Like, Renee didn't actually say she made any more money than anybody. She just said the check's still clear, meaning I'm employed to do this, so I have to be doing something right. That doesn't imply that she's a millionaire. You know, I think that it goes without saying that all three members of the Monday Night Raw broadcasting team, they all make money. They all get paychecks. I think that we can probably assume that safely. So if Michael Cole or Corey Graves or Renee Young say, I get a paycheck, they're not bragging that they're rich. They're just saying, this is a job that I do. This is not a hobby. And that's all really Renee said. But the implication I took it was, but I'm hired to do this, so obviously I'm doing something right. People took it to mean, or this guy took it to mean, what are you bragging about how much money you have? I don't have that much money. I always wonder what it's like to be the guy who sent the tweet that starts the firestorm. You know what I mean? Like, you thought you were just trolling, and it created the entire conversation. And of course, you're just a guy with an egg for a photo on your Twitter account. But Renee hit him back and said, look, the truth is, I don't think I'm that great on commentary. a lot of you tell me I suck, but I'm trying my best, and I'm learning on live television. It's not the easiest thing in the world, blah, blah, blah. And she got a lot of sympathy for it, a lot of nice comments. I sent in a comment just because I felt for her, because we've all been there. Anybody who lives publicly, we've been there where you take Twitter a little bit too seriously, and it gets to you, and you feel like because you read your at mentions, people don't understand that this job that you're doing, while to some it seems like you're just sitting, you know, at a table talking about wrestling, it's actually a really difficult job to do well. And it's a skill that you really have to learn. And it's a skill that Renee is learning, especially being the first full-time female Raw commentator. It's never happened before, okay? It's a lot of responsibility on the shoulders of Renee to, with very, very little commentary experience, step into the booth on the flagship show of WWE, millions of people watching every week. Even when they say, oh, ratings are in the toilet, there's still millions of people watching the show. And that's where she's got to learn how to do this. It's not an easy thing. And I don't even think that excuse needs to be made, because she's really not bad. So I think that there's a couple lessons to be learned there. Number one, I think if you're like one of these Twitter critics, that maybe you realize like you don't need to be like that. That's not, I don't know. I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I would never tell anybody to just stop tweeting their opinion, because that's all I do, is give my opinion. But at the same time, like, I'm aware that if I say something about somebody, it's going to come back at me. You know, and maybe that's just because I do it publicly with my real name. I'm not just some anonymous guy on Twitter. But I think if people on Twitter acted like they may, I think when you tweet, you should say to yourself, could I back this up if I ever saw this person in person? If I was face to face with this person, would I, as they say, keep that same energy? Because more often than not, it's no. But I think the bigger lesson, and this is a lesson across the board, this is for people who have to deal with like cyberbullying at school, this is for people who have to deal with any form of Twitter trolling, whatever, is you just can't take people on social media that seriously, especially the critics. You just can't allow them in, whether that means not checking your at mentions at certain points in the day, whether that means not checking your at mentions at all, whether that means just blowing them off, whether that means, you know, checking them but maintaining that grain of salt as you go. You could do it a million different ways, but you just can't. You have to keep in mind that this is just a random person, a stranger, not thinking about you as an individual at all. Just putting this out there because they don't think anybody's really going to read it more often than not. You know, I would not like anybody to do a social media at mention audit of yours truly. It's a nightmare. But I don't really check my at mentions when I'm doing stuff, whether it's a radio show, whether it's a WWE pre-show, whether it's anything. You know, if I'm doing something actively, I don't check my at mentions that much, because there's a pretty good chance they're not gonna be very good, and I don't want that to affect me whatsoever. But I'm glad so many people came to Renee's defense. I think that she deserves it. And I think, you know, that's what I would hope people would learn. I would hope people would learn that in the bigger picture, people find you annoying if you just criticize on Twitter anonymously. And on the other side of things, you really don't need to take that stuff very seriously. You know, you kind of should move past it and just work on whatever it is you're working on and keep it moving. Keep it moving. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to keep it moving because we're going to talk about social media and all that with Booker T, as well as a whole lot more. My guest this week here on Not Sam Wrestling, he's the 5-time, the one and the only, Booker T.
The Not Sam Wrestling interview.
Well, back on the podcast, somebody who, according to social media, and that's what I base most of my reality on, has had a pretty good last few weeks. Ladies and gentlemen, he's the 5-time. He is, according to The Rock, the most athletically gifted in-ring performer he's ever been in there with. He's one of Cardi B's favorite wrestlers. Booker T's back. What's going on, Book?
What's going on, Gear?
I mean, you've added, I feel like the resume, based on the tweets that have been sent your way in the last month or so, you've really padded that resume lately.
Man, you know, staying relevant. That's the key.
Yeah.
No, seriously, there's so much going on within the storm of, you know, young people coming up. And we see it. We see it all the time. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you don't know when to take a back seat. For me, I've learned how to take a back seat and just enjoy the ride. When I see stuff like that, like Cardi B say, you know, I was one of her favorites. You know, she put me at the top of the list. That's pretty cool. When, you know, The Rock, you know, I remember working with The Rock and, man, I was so tense in those matches because I got a saying, you got to know how to make it in the locker room before you have a chance at making it in the ring. And I knew The Rock was their guy when I came to WWE. So I said, man, I got to go out here and, you know, calculate my way through this thing. So I was working and, but The Rock, this many years later, I realized he was having a whole lot of fun. And then to hear him say it, his affirmation, man, for the hard work that I always tried to go out there and do. And that was make my opponent look good.
Yeah. This is what he said. He said, there's nobody better than Booker T. There was nobody better than Booker T as far as pure in-ring athleticism. Is that something that you kind of knew that he felt that way? Is that the type of information that you guys would share with each other at the time? Or when you're young and when you're going through it, are you too competitive to compliment each other and you have to kind of wait until everybody's in the position that you guys are in to talk about how you really feel?
But I think that's just the way it was back then. It was competition. It was, you know, me against you in a sense. You know, of course, we were going out there working with each other to give the best product and make the show as good as we possibly could. That's just, you know, what professionals do. But at that point in time, you know, I mean, it could have been, you know, The Rock. It could have been, you know, Eddie. It could have been Jericho. It was a host of those guys in the locker room that, you know, we were comrades in arms, but, you know, we were all vying for that top spot, that top position. But then again, to get to work with the guy in the top position is pretty good at the same time.
Right. Because, I mean, what better way to find your way to the top position than to work with that guy and to prove that you can hang toe-to-toe with him?
Yeah. You know, there was always a question, you know, in people's heads, you know, back in the day because I was on one side, you know, and I claimed the moniker, the people's champ, you know, and, of course, he was the people's champ in the WWE, and then we collided. But I tell you, man, I go back and I watch those matches, man. They're actually pretty good. I had to really feel a certain way about matches to actually remember them. And that's why, you know, with The Rock, I don't remember them as much because I was working. And I wasn't having as much fun as I should have been having back then. And that's the one thing that I regret, you know, working with The Rock. I took a little light on him in certain aspects. You know, maybe if I'd have, you know, beat up on him a little bit, had a different opinion.
It's so funny because he said in the same tweet that he woke up the next morning feeling like he had been hit by a truck. So you if you were going light on him, nobody told The Rock that you were going light on him.
Yeah, man, I read that point too. But nah, man, that's what we do, man. That's what professionals do. It's no ill will, no bad taste in my mouth. Rock, I always say, man, was that guy in the locker room that everyone knew how good he was. All those guys back in the WWF when The Rock was coming up, they knew how good he was, and they put the rocket on him, and every one of those guys in the locker room got behind him to make him better. And, you know, I was on the other side watching what The Rock was doing, and I was like, man, this guy is awesome. And I've always given him his props. You know what I mean? No matter what was going on personal between him and I on television, the guy's done a hell of a job, you know, inventing himself, you know, in the wrestling business as well as in Hollywood. Like I say, The Rock could be the president of the United States. That's how many people love him.
Yeah, that's true. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, actually. I think since Raw reunion, seeing guys like you and Stone Cold and kind of the upper tier of superstars in that era who, like you said, you were all very competitive with each other. There was a competition for those top spots. For a guy like you, when do you mellow out? When are you able to start just kind of relaxing? I don't want to say settling into your spot, but realizing, okay, I've accomplished what I intended to accomplish. My resume speaks for itself. When do you get to start mellowing out and be more of the person that you are today in your career? When did that happen?
Yeah, you know, I don't think I've gotten to that point yet.
Really?
I'm not mellowed out yet at all, man. I got so much more work yet to be done, just not in the wrestling ring. But, you know, right now, you know, working for ESPN, you know, yep. I was out in Vegas just last week covering Manny Pacquiao, Keith Thurman. And I'm getting ready to go out in September, September 25th through the 28th to cover, you know, Showtime, Sean Porter and Errol Spence. And, you know, I'm just reinventing myself and just and still forging ahead and moving forward. You know, my radio show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, and I covered yesterday. I covered our show here called The Blitz from 4 to 7. So I did 5 hours of radio just yesterday. You know, my clock never stops, man. I'm moving forward, and what's beautiful about it is, you know, I love what I did. You know what I mean? But I've always wanted to get to that point to where I could live up, you know, and enjoy the fruits of the labor and still be who I was, you know, and I enjoy it now more than anything.
Yeah, I guess it's about transferring those skills that you're good at and saying, you know, just because I'm not in the ring anymore doesn't mean all these other skills that I've had the whole time can't be utilized and figuring out how to move forward with those, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I say, man, I was in Vegas. It was such an awesome time to actually get into something totally different than I've been in. But I've always loved boxing. You know, I've always wanted to, you know, be the guy behind the microphone interviewing, you know, guys like, you know, Danny Garcia, guys like Freddie Roach, guys like Leonard Ellaby. You know, it's awesome actually to be able to, like you say, I always tell young people, you got to know how to change your levels. Mm-hmm. And for myself, I've always been in that person to say, man, I live in seasons. You know, you got your spring, summer, winter, and fall. I never want to stay in one season until it's over with. And right now, man, I'm enjoying life so much. And still, I'm getting ready for SummerSlam, man. We're getting ready to head over to Canada for SummerSlam, and I'm still loving being a part of what the young guys are doing, as well as trying to, you know, guide these guys and give them, you know, that knowledge that I think I have anyway for the ones that want it. You know what I mean? It's a different era, a different age as far as wrestling go. A lot of the young guys think the older guys. I mean, it's something that we got to talk about. So let me bring it up.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the younger guys, they really look at the older guys and not really go to them, you know, and seek that knowledge and say, hey, man, what did it take for you to get to that next level? It's very few young guys have come up to me and you know, approached me from that perspective. And I go, what? Wow. I mean, because myself, when I was a young wrestler, man, I couldn't wait to be around, you know, somebody that could, you know, teach me a little bit of something or give me a tad bit of advice that's going to further my career. But the young guys these days, they're a little bit different.
Do you think that you were unique back then in that sense, or do you feel like most of the locker room, like let's say Raw Reunion, right? You're a big part of Raw Reunion back behind the headset a couple weeks ago, and you got a locker room full of legends now. Do you feel like when you were coming up, when you were a younger guy, you were excited to talk to the legends? Do you think most of the rest of the locker room felt the same way as you, or do you think it was similar in the sense that it was just you and maybe a couple other guys that were going up to him?
Nah, man. There's a reason why, you know, a lot of those guys back in the day made it to the top and made it to a top tier level in the business and got a chance to work on the big stage. I don't care what no one says, you know, as far as getting into the business, a young wrestler getting into this business. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. But I think that the goal is to be at that WrestleMania stage one day. That's the ultimate goal for the wrestler. Maybe these days it's different. You know what I mean? Because wrestling has changed. You know, they're having intergender matches. You know, I saw, a match last week where, you know, the intergender match where the girl stuck a lollipop up a guy's ass. You know, and that was the finish. You know what I mean? And you got people watching it, and so wrestling has changed. You know, so it's hard to dictate what the millennials of the wrestling generation right now wants. It really is.
Do you think to yourself, like, what scenario would it have been in for me to pitch to somebody, okay, and here's what I'm thinking for the finish, I'll shove a lollipop up your ass, and then I'll go for the cover. Like, what? How does that work?
That's where the wrestling world has gone now, man. I mean, and a lot of it is due to social media and people, you know, looking for clicks and looking, you know, for views and whatnot, and, you know, looking, you know, hopefully, you know, somebody will send them a check for it, whatnot. But that's what wrestling has been. You know, once upon a time, you know, I thought wrestling was taking a curve and taking the wrong direction with the NWO. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? NWO doesn't compare nothing to the lollipop in the intergender wrestling. And I thought the NWO was changing the landscape just because the cowboys was running from the Indians.
Right. Know? Right. Right. Yeah, you're exposing too much, and you're reversing. It's supposed to be the good guys chase the bad guys, not the other way around, and now you've gotten like that's the tip of the iceberg.
Exactly my point. When the bad guys start, you know, chasing the good guy, when the cops start running from the robbers, we got a problem. You know what I mean? How serious? Yeah. You're changing everything. You're just messing up the blueprint. And, you know, I was talking to Colt Cabana last week, actually. I was in Minnesota, and I had a show down there, an autograph signing I was doing. And we were talking about this, and he was saying, you know, his era, you know, got a chance to watch the rise of ECW.
Right.
So when he got in the business, they pretty much took, you know, from ECW and then added more to it, you know, and it became even more shock value. And I go, you know, that right there is very, very scary because now, you know, the story in professional wrestling, going out and, you know, creating and making fans feel a certain way and have an emotional connection, that goes out of the window, and it becomes a stunt fest. How many stunts can we go out and do in a match? You know, and I say, okay, it's your era, and you can do whatever you want with it, but I say, I'm 54 years old, and the way I went out and performed, it enabled me to still walk upright at 54 years old. These guys that's doing this crazy stuff, jumping off stuff, landing, they may not understand it right now, but trust me, they will one day.
Man, I was listening, Stone Cold had Hulk Hogan on his podcast, and I was listening just to the beginning of that interview, and all Steve did was ask him, how are you doing? And Hogan spent the next 15 minutes listing all the injuries and all the surgeries and all the everything that he had to go through, and that's wrestling like Hulk Hogan. I mean, I think about, you know, it's funny that you bring up that conversation.
But before you move on, before you go, but that leg drop.
Yeah.
That leg drop, how many times over and over and over and over and over, when you commit to something and you have to, you know, and that's your finish and that's, you got to go out there and do that for 20 years straight. Getting in the ring is not like a bounce house. You know what I mean? So every time that hit that canvas, something jarred. And that's the result of it. I did the Harlem Hangover in my career. But you could count on one hand how many times you've seen it on television.
That was for special occasions only.
Oh, for very special occasions.
Right.
You know, and the concept for me was, I got to get the people to buy into me, of course. So, okay, I'm going to go out and do something a little bit over the top. Okay, I'm going to make the people go, wow. You know what I mean? So I did the Harlem Hangover. But at certain points in time, I was going to go, man, you know, I know I can't continue to go out there and do that to my body because something's going to pop. Something's going to break sooner or later. You know, so I devised a plan. You know, when I go up to do the Harlem Hangover, hey, man, get up and I hit you with that missile drop kick and we'll take it home. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I still get the same pop.
Right.
I still get the same reaction. And that's what I think young kids these days, they got to realize how to go out and utilize. I look at a guy like Ricochet.
Mm-hmm.
He can do anything. And a guy that can go out and he's so impressive when he goes out and perform. On both sides, you know, both spectrum, offense, defense, whatnot. The guy goes out there and gives it 100%. And watching him on the independent scene, man, that guy went out and did so much more than he do right now. So to watch Ricochet scale it back and be able to use his tools properly is very important. Now, on the other hand, I do understand being out there on the independent circuit, you got to do anything to get seen because you are trying to come up to the next level. So I do understand it from that perspective as well. Don't think I'm just outdated and don't understand.
Right.
But I say you can make it easier on yourself.
Man, and you've got to understand, it goes beyond ECW. I mean, I remember like when I'm in high school, late 90s, early 2000s, and I'm tape trading, like there were backyard wrestlers that were becoming kind of famous for just wrestling in their backyard. And do, I mean, you talk about crazy stunts, you're talking about guys that haven't been trained. You're talking about guys that aren't even wrestling in a building. They're literally kids in their backyard mimicking stuff to like the 100th degree that they saw on either an ECW show or a CZW show or whatever it was. And now they're starting to develop a buzz and you're hearing people that are going, I want to be just like this kid that I saw doing this backyard tape, and you're like, you already are. He's just a kid in the backyard. You already are that kid.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. They got these guys now called YouTubers.
Yeah.
And they're actually, you know, acting like wrestlers and creating their own shows, and people are actually watching it. And it's the craziest thing that I've ever seen. My thing is this, you know, I got into business. I didn't get into the business to become famous or anything like that. I didn't even know if I wanted to make any money at it. It was a hobby for me. But once I found out that I could make money doing this, I said, okay, it became a job. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I knew at the end of the day, on any job, you want to be able to retire. You want the pension at the end of the day, too.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't want to walk away from the job with nothing at 65 years old and you still got perhaps 25 good years of life left in you. You know what I mean? So at 30 years old, I was planning for the future. And that's what I stress to these young guys. Think about, you know, what you're going out there and you know, putting yourself in front of, as well as think about, you know, the afterlife, the future. And I started thinking about this when I was 30 years old. And like I say, right now, I'm happy, man. I'm the happiest person in the world. I go places now. Of course, I mean, I haven't wrestled in 8 years, but it seemed like I just wrestled yesterday when I walk out of my house, because like I said earlier, when we first start this conversation, staying relevant within the storm is very important.
Yeah, man, I was talking to, I'm not going to say who it was, but I was talking to one of the superstars that's in WWE right now, and he was saying that he was just buying a new house. And the one thing that he was like insistent upon was that the master bedroom is on the first floor because he can't do the stairs every day. And you just go, it's those little things that you don't even realize, because when the adrenaline's kicking in and you're out there and you're performing, you look like you're on top of the world. But you got guys right now that are like, I don't want stairs in my house because I can't walk them every day.
Wow. It's unbelievable. And these are young guys.
Mm-hmm.
These are guys that's in their, you know, early, mid-30s, some of them in their 20s. And I watch how some of these guys go out there and work. You know, back in the day, it was, you know, the Booker T chant, you know, but today's wrestler is the This Is Awesome chant.
Right.
And the This Is Awesome chant entails, you know, how many bumps you can go out and give me, you know, how many This Is Awesome chants we can get, because you get the This Is Awesome chant per bump.
So. We'll get back to more Booker T momentarily, but he was just talking about staying relevant. Booker said you gotta stay relevant. He's staying relevant. You know what I think relevancy means? It means being virile, staying virile, and being virile throughout all of your life. That's what your partner's looking for anyway. Your partner says that they want you to stay relevant in the relationship. You know what that means? Physically, you need to be there. Anybody that was listening to the podcast last week, they heard my wife. You listened to it. You heard my wife. She's sitting in the Not Sam studio with me watching Monday Night Raw. You know what I have to do to make sure that she knows that I love her and that I'm not just sitting there making her watch these ridiculous shows? I need to show her my affection physically. I need to be able to go at a moment's notice whenever she needs some of that sweet Sam Roberts loving. But that doesn't just require a physical response. It covers the mental, the confidence. Sometimes I'm just like all of you. I come across hardened and cool as the other side of the pillow. But the fact is, I have my confidence issues. You know what takes care of me from a physicality and a confidence level? Blue Chew. I chew on one blue, and guess what? I know Jess is going to be satisfied. She's going to be satisfied at a moment's notice. I'm going to be confident enough to satisfy her. I mean, for God's sake, we may have a third kid if I don't stop eating all these Blue Chews. You see, Blue Chew is the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. Anytime, day or night, full stomach, whatever you want to do. You just pop one in and you are good to go. See, they work up to twice as fast as a pill because they're chewable. You can prove to your wife, like I proved to my wife, that you are still in this thing, that you are not just some weirdo who's obsessed with wrestling, by always being ready to satisfy her, by chewing up these Blue Chews and being ready to go like a baby's arm. Blue Chew does it for you. If you could benefit from extra function or more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew, the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. And guess what? It's made in the USA. And since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. It's amazing. Prescribed online, shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. There's never an in-person doctor's visit. There's no waiting in the pharmacy. Blue Chew will add to your erectile functionality and take away awkwardness that is in your life. It's an amazing product, and I would say that you should give it a try. I am so confident that you should give it a try that I talked to the Blue Chew folks, and I said, why don't you give the Not Sam Wrestling folks a free try? They said, okay, Not Sam Wrestling people want to satisfy their partners? They can have some Blue Chew for free. All you have to do is visit BlueChew.com and use promo code Roberts. You do that, your first shipment will come free. All you have to do is pay $5 for shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code Roberts. Try it for free. Let's get back to talking to Booker T, and then I'm going to take a Blue Chew. And maybe I'll impregnate my wife again.
So that could be a 20-buff night, you know. For me, I was thinking about going out and making a fan. Perfect example. And I stress to all of you guys out there listening right now to go in and watch it. But Undertaker and Shawn Michaels' WrestleMania match was one of the most compelling matches that one could ever see. Undertaker took a bump over the top rope. He did the dive over the top, and he almost like landed right on his head. Mm-hmm. And they may have stayed outside 5 minutes. It seemed like that long. Anyway, it could have been longer. That's how it felt. It was the moment was so real. It was like, you know, let's bring in the doctors, let's get the ambulance, back it up to the ring. That's how serious it felt in that moment. Of course, the match continued, and it had so many more compelling moments even after that. And you get so caught up in the drama of what's going on. None of the moves are just tools, but the drama that you get caught up in that match is so freaking awesome.
Yeah.
If the young guys of this business cannot go and watch that and take away from that and understand it, we got a problem.
Speaking of the young guys, something I was thinking again, going back to Raw Reunion, is watching the end of the show, seeing the toast to Raw, Stone Cold's out there cutting an amazing Stone Cold promo, everybody's in the ring having a great time. If you were one of the guys who's on the active roster, let's say you're a guy in your mid-30s, you're back to Booker T fighting for that top spot. Let's say you're Seth Rollins, you're AJ Styles, or whoever you are, right? And you see that spotlight is being shined on you legends the way it is. Are you sitting there going, yeah, well, tonight's a night about celebrating the legends? Or are you sitting there going, what's the deal with putting the spotlight on these guys? We're the ones that are here every day.
You know, if if that's the sentiment, you know, that any one of those young guys in the locker room take for a second, mm-hmm. you know, man, I really feel for the business, you know what I mean? Because the business has never had, it's never been about me.
Hmm.
Not one day. It's always been about us. And I was talking to Stone Cold last week at the Raw reunion, and I said, can you imagine one of the young players saying, Arnold Palmer sucked? Why are we celebrating him? What has he done?
Right.
Roger Federer. Are you kidding me? That guy's barely hanging on. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
The young guys are always supposed to celebrate. I got a chance to sit next to Wahoo McDaniel in WCW, and he was, you know, one of my favorite when I came up. And I was in awe. I was like, wow, man, I'm getting a chance to sit next to Wahoo McDaniel. Hopefully, you know, a little bit rub off of me. You know what I mean? Just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's just that alone, just to get in there, just to sit in there with him, you know, was, you know, an honor for me. And the guys that paved the way, I respect those guys so much, man. Like I say, every time I've gone out and wrestled with Christian, you know, it's never been about him and I, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I went out and worked with Chris Jericho, no matter how much we were competing against each other, it was never about him and I, you know. Every one of the guys, you know, that I've, the Bret Harts of the world that I've gone out and worked with, you know, it's never been about us, you know. It's always been about the fans and man, the road back in the day, the story the guys tell you about, you know, me being on the road is entertaining them, you know, in front of the television monitor while the guys were out in the ring working, you know, because we had to be on the road together. We had to share that locker room together. We had to, you know, we was with each other a lot of times more than our families. So in order to make everything work properly, everybody had to be on the same page, rowing together at the same time to get to our destination. And I stress that to these young guys. That's the only way you make it to the top. You got to, like I said again, you got to know how to make it in the locker room before you have a chance at making it in the ring. Look at Enzo.
Right. It's a good point.
And I like it, so got kids, got talent.
Right.
But when you can't make it in the locker room, uh-huh. you got a problem. Look at the Miz.
Yeah, okay? It took him a long time.
Miz, they tried to kick Miz out of the locker room. They tried to keep him out, but the Miz was smarter than all of them. And look at him now.
Yep.
Look at him now.
Yep.
And I knew Miz was one of the first kids I brought down to my wrestling, you know, one of my wrestling shows way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I tell you, certain guys know what it takes to make it in the locker room. You got to know what the test is in order to pass the test. And certain guys just don't have that ability to pull that off, you know, and I think that's what it comes down to at the end of the day.
Is that still happening as much today as it was back then? Or is there still, I mean, I guess you bring up Enzo and obviously it is, right?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's because, you know what it is? It's because of social media.
Right.
You can go on social media and post about your job and what's going on behind the scenes, business related stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting a push, this, that, whatnot, and the other. You're thinking about your social media followers, you know, and when you got a grievance, you go to the social media followers. It's so, you know, convoluted now with social media and what's real and what's not. It blows my mind.
Well, I was going to ask you about social media because it's been kind of a hot topic. It seems like more and more now, people are kind of trying to start getting things going, whether it's for themselves, whether it's a bigger plan. It seems more and more like storylines and TV stuff is starting by wrestlers trash-talking each other on social media. Now, you're no stranger to this. I remember not too long ago, the world was convinced that a Corey Graves-Booker T match was coming to WrestleMania at some point because of some social media stuff. But... What do you think of the rivalries that are starting on Twitter.
Now, I do think social media could be used, fairly well with the storylines that's going on television. Of course, if we're going to keep the story going, of course we could do that. But this is not MMA. You don't call guys out in wrestling to begin a match, okay? Mm-hmm. That's not the way it happens. Your talent in wrestling, it starts in the ring. First and foremost, you got to be able to go out and perform. You know, a writer can't write something for you. I don't care. You know how good the writer is. If you suck in the ring and you can't go out and perform and put behinds in the seats, nothing matter. Your social media, none of that. It all comes down to talent at the end of the day. And people can say whatever they want to say, but you know, I've been young before, you know what I mean? I've been in that locker room before. I've had, situations. When I first got to WWE, I had so many people telling me so many different things. You know, I was going to lose my mind, as well as I knew I was going to get fired, you know? So I'd rather go to Vince McMahon and say, hey, Vince, you mind if I do all of my stuff my way? And if I don't put asses in the seats, just fire me, okay? That's our deal. If I don't put asses in the seats, just fire me, okay? Because I know I'm going to get fired their way.
Is that a real conversation that you had?
Yes, that's a conversation that we had.
That's great.
And he said, okay, do your stuff. From that point on, I did my stuff, and I've gotten over. I don't care what no one say. I got over. I hear people on social media. I've heard people on social media say, Booker T was snowboarding a mid-card worker. And I'm like, wait a minute. You got to be kidding me, right? You know, now, wait a minute now. Don't think that I haven't worked in the mid-card. I've worked in the mid-card. I've worked at the lower tier, but I've worked at the top level as well. So let's get our facts straight, first and foremost. In this era, I think I would have gotten over just as well. Because of those things, of knowing exactly what it takes to make it in the locker room in order to make it in the ring, as well as I never was worried about how talented I was. I never was worried about when guys would get fired, you know, the month after WrestleMania or back at WCW when the year, you know, fallout came and guys started. I never was worried at that time. I've never been released from, you know, my spot or my job because I've always been Johnny on the spot, on time, getting the work done in the ring as well as out of the ring. So I think young guys, if they adopt that sentiment and think about their talent, because that's the only thing that you're going to have to look back on at the end of the day. That's the only thing you can fall back on at the end of the day is your talent, how good you are and how many asses you put in seats, how many tickets you sell, how much merch you sell. And that's what it comes down to at the end of the day, not your wrestling, because it's not wrestling. This is Shakespeare.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Do you think that there is too much concentration, there's too much attention paid to what the app mentions are saying, what the social media following is saying?
Of course it is. I mean, a lot of these guys, they live by social media, and I just think, you know, that they're listening to the wrong people at first and foremost, because you got to understand, all those guys out there on social media that's making those comments, none of those, I would say 99.99% of those guys have never been in the situation that they're, you know, giving the guy the advice to.
Right. Yeah. 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 You just went from the opposite. Right. We started this conversation talking about going to like the legends in your profession for advice and the people that came before you and all this. And now we've gone the complete opposite side where there are guys now who will ignore the legends and go to some guy who's got a Twitter account that never did anything and listen
exactly
to him.
My point.
Yeah.
That's exactly my point. I think that's a huge part of the problem when you can even think about listening to someone telling you, hey, don't listen to these guys, you do it. It amazes me. You know, some of the stuff I see out there, it blows me away that a lot of these promoters book it, you know what I mean? And I'm not going to call out any names or anything like that. To each his own, okay? You know what I mean? But it blows me away when some of the stuff I see out on some of these shows. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I felt for Renee Young earlier this week, and I'm sure that you've been in a similar position. I mean, you did commentary on Raw for a lot of weeks. I'm sure every single time you got behind a headset, somebody had something to say on social media, and like, you know, Renee's got to actually explain herself to people who don't really even deserve an explanation, I don't think.
They don't deserve an explanation. And the thing is, I mean, she's the first of her kind.
Right.
I mean, she's in a position that no other female has been in. You know, she should be celebrated.
Yes.
She really should. She should be celebrated. But there's so many people out there that's just negative. They're looking for, you know, the negative part of their day to spill over on you. And they can get behind that keyboard and those characters, and they can, you know, have their opinions, you know, make their comments, you know. And me, you know, I told Renee, don't listen to it. You know what I mean? You know, you got your Twitter, you know, put your tweets out, but don't respond or don't listen to any of them, because people are going to say what they want to say. Keep doing what you're doing. That job, people don't know what it entails. It's 52 weeks out of the year. The preparation that goes into that job, you know, the people that's talking about it, the 99.99%, they have no idea. And those are the people that's commenting. So you really can't, you know, if I listen to social media, man, I would have put a bullet in my head a long time ago. I'm serious.
I'm
sure somebody have told me, hey, why don't you just put a bullet in your head? You know what I mean?
So okay.
You can't follow those rules, man. You just can't.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's mainly people that not only are they not in a qualified position to, you know, make the kind of assessment that you would take really seriously, but they don't even know what the job is, I don't think, most of the time. And I feel like if you look at the history of the WWE and decisions that are made in WWE, if you're asked back next week, you're doing a good job. Because I don't think if WWE were saying that person, whether it's a commentator or a superstar or an announcer or, you know, a timekeeper, whoever it is, if you're asked back next week to do the job again, you're doing a good job.
Well, you coming to work and you're showing up and you're doing what they're asking you to go out there and do. I mean, I've been part of that company now for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be there, and you know, for quite a bit more time. So all of you listeners, you're going to be seeing my face for quite some time on WWE program.
Hey.
And you know, it's cool. I love it, you know, and I'm going to keep doing what I do. I'm not going to let anyone out there, you know, discourage me. You know, a lot of times people sit there in the audience, man, like I say, on social media, and they think they can get up and go out there and do what those guys do in the ring. They think they can go out there and perform the shows better than these guys. You know what I mean? So a lot of those guys get heat, which is I'm like, come on. That's where we are with social media, and you can only take it with a grain of salt as far as your job goes. Because at the end of the day, it's about taking care of your family. At
right.
the end of the day, it's about, you know, getting that paycheck and utilizing it properly. That's what it's about at the end of the day. And I just think a lot of times these you get so caught up in, you know, the stardom and, you know, like I say, what other people think of you and not what you think of yourself.
That's a great way to put it. You know, WWE made the announcement a few weeks ago, Paul Heyman taking over Raw, Eric Bischoff taking over SmackDown. Obviously, in the history of your career, you've worked more with Bischoff than Paul Heyman, especially in a role, you know, where they're in a position of power. What do you think of Eric Bischoff coming in and taking over SmackDown?
Well, I mean, Paul Heyman, you know, I've said it publicly. I think the guy's a genius, man. He's done very well over the years as far as being able to go out and create.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly than anything, you can actually see, you know, as of late on Raw, you know, you can see some parts of Paul Heyman's footprint
mm-hmm.
on certain things. And you can see the difference in the way things are done or the way things are shot. You know, I think it's good. You know, Eric Bischoff as well. Eric Bischoff has been a guy who always wanted to, you know, be innovative as far as the business goes. He always wanted, you know, more for the stars, the boys. And that's just a true statement. I was there with him, and I watched it, you know, up close and personal. A lot of bad decisions were made back then. When you got a lot of people around you, helps you make bad decisions. It's easier to make bad decisions. but I think him being in that role, I think it's good because both of them, because they're outsiders looking in. People can easily say, man, you know, Stephanie could have took that role, or you know, Hunter could have took that role. But I really feel like it's really hard, you know, trying to be an insider and run the company from an outside perspective. Mm. And I think with Paul Heyman and Bischoff, in certain perspectives, maybe checks and balances, more importantly than anything, will be met. And hopefully that may be the one thing that, you know, flip the show around.
Who are you looking at? Who are you looking at right now? Who's your, you know, as we head towards SummerSlam and everything, in terms of main roster guys, who are you really looking forward to seeing making an impact coming out of SummerSlam into the fall? And I mean, crazy enough, headed towards Royal Rumble and then WrestleMania again.
Well, I'm kind of, you know, I've got a, you know, I play favorites a little bit, you know what I mean? So I'm hoping Ember Moon go in there and, you know, pull off the big one, man. It will be a shocking, it will be a surprise, but it will be a testament to all the hard work that she's put in over the years. You know, people only see what she's done this short, you know, amount of time, you know, in WWE, but man, she's been grinding her butt off to get to that point, you know, and she was definitely, you know, one of the ones that, you know, pretty much was told that, hey, this business may not be for you, you know what I mean? This level may not be for you, but persistence, man, and hard work, it pays off. So hopefully Ember Moon will come out of this thing smelling like a rose. Of course, you know, I'm all about the young guys. I love what Ricochet and AJ is doing right now. Those guys are going out there and, you know what though, but every match at SummerSlam, I must say, it got an old school feel to it. It has a feel to, from my perspective, some matches and some guys that's going to go out there and try to give those fans what we tried to give them back in the day, and that was a moment that they were going to remember for the rest of their lives. A moment that was going to be frozen in time. When you talk to these guys 20 years after, you know, seeing, you know, SummerSlam, they're going to be saying, man, I remember you guys at SummerSlam, you know, in Canada. It was so awesome. You know, I think every match on the card, all the way as far as Trish and Charlotte, all of the matches have that one quality that can give the fans something that they're going to remember for the rest of their life. And I think that's what the difference is with Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff being a part of the show. I think it's going to go. I think that's the change that's going to happen over the next, year to 3 years, as well as not wrestling moving forward, but wrestling taking a step back to move forward.
You had a pretty major clap back towards Mr. Matt Riddle. After Matt Riddle made his comments about Bill Goldberg, you decided to let your opinions about Matt Riddle be known. And it kind of goes along with what we were talking about, you know, earlier in the conversation about legends and young guys, et cetera, et cetera. Have you had any words? Have you spoken at all to Matt Riddle since? Because, I mean, you talked about him and you said that, you know, he should be more respectful, his work, blah, blah, blah. It went everywhere. I mean, everybody was talking about, you know, you yeah. coming to Goldberg's defense. It was obviously this has gotten back to Matt Riddle. Has there been any conversation between you two?
No conversation. It just, I wasn't trying to belittle Matt Riddle or anything, but I just wanted him to understand a little bit more about the wrestling business, because it's not mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. It's not MMA. It's not us against each other on social media, no matter how bad our matches are. We work for the same company, first and foremost, at least, you know, at least he was that one night under that banner, as well as, like I say, the business, of course, is about the wrestling, of course, it's about how well we entertain. But at the end of the day, it's not, because, you know, the Honky Tonk Man, he'll go down as, you know, the greatest intercontinental champion of all time. And You don't remember a whole lot of the great Honky Tonk Man matches, but Honky Tonk drew a whole lot of money in this business. And that's what the business was, you know, founded upon, man, how much money we could draw, because it is entertainment. And when you got a, like, when you got a guy like Goldberg, who, you know, pretty much slipped on a banana peel and got into the business and was thrust into a position, hey, who do you blame him for taking the money? No, you don't. Do you blame him for, you know, taking that ride, you know, and, you know, to start him? No, you don't. I mean, because like I say, he was thrust in that position. He took it. But then again, he represented mixed martial arts when he first came in, perhaps the first guy to represent mixed martial arts and put those guys on the map. So you don't disparage a guy like that because of one match in Saudi Arabia, you know, especially on social media. If you got something to say to a guy like that, say it in his face, say it to his face. If you got something to say, don't say it on social media. Don't go there and make it something that is not to the world, you know, because that's why I say social media is misused. It's because it's just like two fighters, something happened in sparring. And then next thing you know, they're talking about it on social media. What happened in sparring stays in sparring. That's part of the business. And when the codes get broken, I think checks and balances there again need to be made.
That makes sense. I feel like we've learned a lot today, Booker. I feel like there's been a lot of knowledge sprinkled throughout this entire conversation, and there's a lot of knowledge sprinkled throughout just about everything that you do. Of course, you're now on the radio all the time, ESPN, Hall of Fame. You do a great job, by the way, of taking snippets in case you don't have access to Booker T's radio show, which, you know, you can listen online. You should find access to it. But you go on the Reality of Wrestling YouTube channel, and, you know, people, you look at those YouTube hits, people care about Booker T's opinion on all this stuff. Are you surprised that there's such a great audience reaction to you going like, okay, we're going to talk about whatever people are talking about? And clearly, I mean, you know, we're talking about asses in seats. Look at the numbers. People are interested in what you have to say, Book.
Hey man, I just speak it like it is. I'm a realist. Everybody know that. I don't shy away from anything like that. I'm thankful more than anything. Because I say, when people say, man, do you get tired of people, you know, asking you for your autograph, you know, pointing to take pictures of us? I say, when that stopped happening, that's when I got a problem.
Yeah.
but for me, to actually, you know, have a media platform to actually be able to speak on, you know, what's happening, to be able to bring the young guys up, because people always say, man, you know, I mean, they talk down to young people, but sometimes you got to go down to their level to bring them up to your level. That's why I don't blame Matt Riddle or anything. Sometimes you got to go down to their level to bring them up to your level, and maybe they'll understand. And I think for me, being able to sprinkle that little bit of knowledge, you know, and just tell it like it is, I appreciate the listeners for tuning in. I really do.
Well, check out the radio show, Booker T, Brad Gilmore. It's on all the time. Whenever you want to hear it, you can listen online. You can watch the YouTube clips. It's amazing. And I'll see you in Toronto, man. I'll see you for SummerSlam.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, we'll see you in the sixth, man. All back.
It's now time for this week's State of Wrestling.
Welcome to this week's State of Wrestling here on Not Sam Wrestling. Of course, yours truly, the last professional broadcaster, breaking down what to me, in my own personal and ever so humble opinion, are the top five stories this week in professional wrestling. And we start with story number five. We got some of the details on the big, I'll call it a television taping, even though it's not exactly a taping because it's live, AEW's first live television event. Of course, it's going down October 2nd. It'll be live on TNT, and it's going to be in Washington, D.C. Tickets go on sale on Friday at noon. It's going to be really interesting to see, because even looking at the match lineup, like, clearly, this is not a pay-per-view. We're now, for the first time in AEW, entering into territory where these aren't giant make-or-break, brand-defining pay-per-views. It's a TV taping. It's a TV taping that will happen every single week throughout the country. So this, and over the course of the next several weeks, will really start to gauge product interest right now, and it'll be interesting to see how product interest grows
throughout AEW's tenure on television once it's on, of course, in about 2 months. But AEW announced two matches, three things for the TV taping so far as of this taping. The first match, and I believe this will be the first match on AEW TV, Cody will be in the first match against Sammy Guevara. And some people were underwhelmed by this. Look, I think not only do I think this is going to be a good match, I think it's a really good first TV match because it's a good exhibition and a good display for what AEW can do. I think that managing expectations is something that now that AEW is in this space of not just being a super show company, they kind of have to be able to do. I think that the reason that people were disappointed, and, you know, AEW defenders were saying, why are you acting disappointed? This is a match for a TV show. This isn't a pay-per-view. They're not, every match can't be the main event championship match, and it's true. That's all true. But I think managing expectations is important, and when 24 hours before that announcement gets made, it's, hey, in 24 hours, we're going to announce who the first match is going to be. In 1 hour, we're going to announce who the first match is going to be. And then that's the announcement. It's like, oh, I thought it was going to be like a big historic match, not just a match that will be historic potentially in the context of history. Right? Some matches on paper, you go, oh, yeah, there you go. Those are pay-per-view matches. Matches like the Jericho Omega rematch, matches like Cody and Dustin, you know, that type of stuff. People immediately on paper go, that's a dream match, that's a huge match, that's going to be the match. Other matches are like, okay, that'll be good. You know, I think it might have been better if they had just jumped on the internet and said, hey, here's the first match. Because then what do people have to complain about? If they're still complaining after that, well, that's not much of an announcement. It's like, okay, we never said it was going to be an announcement. What I think is a bigger match is also happening. It's a six-man tag. It's Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against Jericho and two mystery partners. And Jericho said, you won't believe who I'm bringing to the show, which is a very Jericho thing to say. He's always been good about hyping things up. You know, I think that hopefully, and again, we talk about managing expectations. Hopefully that means it'll be somebody new that we're not used to seeing in AEW. Certainly could be LAX. With Jericho's Canadian heritage and his ties to the Hart family, could be Teddy Hart and Brian Pillman Jr. showing up at AEW. There's a lot of people that it could be. But just the fact that Omega and Jericho and the Young Bucks are all involved in that match makes it pretty big. And then, of course, Jon Moxley will be there. It doesn't say if he's wrestling. It just says an appearance by Jon Moxley. You know, there's also, you know, a certain amount of delicacy that has to be taken. Delicacy? Delicacy is like a food. Like, ooh, this is quite the delicacy. Maybe delicateness? Certain degree of delicacy? Either way, you have to tread lightly. Because I think that the Double or Nothing pay-per-view will have pretty big ramifications for the first TV show. So it won't be until then that we could really shape what this is going to look like. But nonetheless, we'll be watching and seeing what happens when those tickets are on sale. And you know, and the thing starts to feel real. Story number four is what Booker T was talking about in our interview this week. Story number four is Joey Ryan's latest intergender match. Now, a little while back, and you can go back and look at the previous episodes of Not Sam Wrestling. There's something I really love about this podcast. First of all, I'm the host. Second of all, is that all of our episodes, this is now episode 249. Next week, it'll be 250 episodes. All of the episodes and the bonus shows that were done for free, not the Patreon bonus shows, but all, every episode of the 250 and the non-Patreon bonus episodes are all still available. They're all still on the server. They're all still in this RSS feed. If you go back, you can find every single episode. You only have to go back a few weeks, and you'll find our interview with Joey Ryan. And he talks about the match with Candice LeRae and how that was a huge step in his career and definitely a huge step for intergender wrestling. It kind of opened people's eyes to it. Now, Booker T in the interview was talking about an intergender match he saw where the finish was a lollipop being stuck up a man's ass. And that's true. That match went as a Joey Ryan match. And it went, let me look up who his opponent is. I'm blanking on it right now, and I want to respect her because it's quite the accomplishment what Joey Ryan and his opponent have managed to get done. It's pretty impressive because, and I don't want to give the statistic until I get the actual name of the opponent. Bear with me for a moment. I'm sure that there are some of you out there right now listening to this podcast just screaming at your listening device, going, what do you mean? It's Miranda Alize. Yes. Alize? A-L-I-Z-E? Whatever. Anyway, it happened. And this match has 4.6 million views in 2 days. Now, if you look at some of Joey Ryan's other intergender matches, his match with Scarlett Bordeaux, 42 million views over the course of 8 months. A year ago, it was Joey Ryan versus Brandi Rhodes. That was a WrestlePro match. 5.5 million views. That's three matches right there. Joey Ryan versus Eva Lise on Lucha Underground. 1.3 million views. Joey Ryan versus Carly Katrina Perez. 4.4 million views. Priscilla Kelly vomits on Joey Ryan's penis at bar wrestling. Okay. 2.9 million views. Joey Ryan versus Shayna Baszler, intergender. 1.6 million views. Okay. All of these matches, all these intergender matches have millions of views. The one from this week, Joey Ryan versus Miranda Alize, where the lollipop goes up the butt. 4.6 million views in 48 hours. Clearly, there is an appetite for intergender wrestling. Now, I guess you could question what people get out of it, but at the end of the day, you could probably question what people get out of any wrestling match. If there are creeps watching intergender wrestling, you have to imagine that there are creeps watching women's matches, right? But 4.4 million views over the course of 48 hours cannot be ignored. That's why it's our fourth story of the week. And even the lollipop in the bum. I remember watching death matches when I was growing up, when I was a tape trader. Whether people believe it or not, I did trade tapes. And I was a pretty big tape trader on the internet, as a matter of fact. But I remember watching a Japanese death match where it was an anal explosion death match, and the only way to win was to put a stick of dynamite in your opponent's butthole and light it. That was 2000, 2001, maybe even before that. So, for the record, sticking things in people's rectums in a wrestling ring is not brand new. I just find it very interesting that there is such an appetite for intergender wrestling. I mean, did you hear that unbelievable statistic from 8 months ago? 42 million views on Joey Ryan versus Scarlett Bordeaux. And Scarlett Bordeaux has got a lot of exposure from being on Impact Wrestling. But, you know, 42 million views? Those are WWE numbers. Bigger than most WWE numbers. Bigger than, I would hope, that Scarlett Bordeaux and Joey Ryan made a lot of money off that YouTube video. Because that's huge money. You know, I would think that's probably somewhere around $1 billion. I don't know. I did the math just now, and it's $1.5 billion. Maybe not that high, but it's a lot of money. So hopefully they're making some cash off this. And same with this 4.4 million view video. There's no doubt about it. There's an audience for intergender wrestling, and Joey Ryan has become the king of it. Now, the question is, will it ever work on mainstream? Look, I was watching this match that Joey Ryan had, and it was taken seriously. You know, it's easy to kind of brush it off And I'm not saying Booker T brushed it off necessarily, but it is easier to brush it off because the finish is a lollipop to the rectum. But if you watch the whole match, they do take it pretty seriously throughout. And obviously Joey Ryan knows what he's doing at this point. Look, you know, nobody's watching wrestling thinking that they're watching a documentary anymore. Everybody kind of knows what it is. So the question is, are you able to suspend disbelief enough to believe this intergender match is happening? And are they able to pull it off without it being uncomfortable and feeling abusive? I think Joey Ryan's been able to do that. And he's been able to do it in an entertaining way. At the end of the day, Booker T's own rules. You got to figure out what's putting asses in seats. Who's making money? Who's drawing money? And getting 42 million views on YouTube is drawing money. Getting 4.4 million views in 48 hours is drawing money. Joey Ryan's intergender matches are drawing big internet money. So, you know, you could have your personal preference, but at the end of the day, is it good or bad for the industry? I think it's tough to argue that it's bad if it's working. I'm willing to hear anything to the contrary, but it's hard to believe that it's bad because it's working. Let's go to story number three. Story number three was part of a really good, in my opinion, episode of Monday Night Raw. And we'll talk more about it throughout the State of Wrestling segment. But this week's Monday Night Raw, I think, was really, really good. And I'll tell you why. It felt to me like you could really feel Paul Heyman's fingers on this episode of Raw. And it wasn't because, you know, they were sneaking in a curse word or it was a little more edgy than usual or it was anything like that. But when you really think about everything that you saw on Raw, it was kind of everything that you'd hoped it would be coming off of Raw Reunion. I mean, people looked really good. People got over on this episode of Raw. New stars are clearly being made. There is a tremendous foundation that is being laid. I believe, you know, I'll be honest with you. There are plenty of episodes of Raw that if I'll turn it off at 11 p.m. and I'll be bummed out. I'll be like, you know, for 3 hours of TV and all the talent they've got on the roster, that could have been a more exciting show. I felt really optimistic coming off of Raw this week. And one of the reasons I felt optimistic was because my boys, the Good Brothers, are the tag team champions of Monday Night Raw. That story number three is the OC. The original, the omnipotent, the oniony, the orchestrated, the occipital, the original club. AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, Karl Anderson. Of course, Karl Anderson has been on this show many times now. AJ Styles has been on before, and Luke Gallows. Well, Luke Gallows has been on before, too. We did a live show with Anderson and Gallows. You know, to see a team that was being so grossly underutilized as the Good Brothers come forward, and on a night where the artist formerly known as Machine Gun Karl Anderson has that MG printed on his tights, to see them win the tag team championship out of nowhere, I think is fantastic. Because what you've got now is you've got two teams that you cannot deny are two of the best tag teams of the last decade. The Revival and the Usos. I've been saying that about the Usos for years. But, or at least for months. But the Revival is in that category too. Now you've also got the OC. And while people could say that about Gallows and Anderson the whole time, they were losing all the time. The fact that now they've got tag team gold around their waist, it adds credibility to that team. So now, I mean, look at all the teams that you've got in WWE. You got the Revival. You got the Usos. You got the New Day. You got the Good Brothers. You got Heavy Machinery. The list goes on and on and on. Those are just the ones that pop off the top of the head just now as we're talking. You know? I think seeing them, not only... They especially made me feel optimistic because when I watched them, it felt like people were taking them seriously as bad guys. They were a real threat. You know, it's in the work that's been done really over the course of just the last 3 weeks. You have reminded people what Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows are capable of. This didn't feel like, you know, a participation trophy. This didn't feel like, oh, this team's been losing and losing. Let's, like, shock the world and have them win the tag team championship. This felt like the two biggest bad guys in tag team wrestling right now, at least in the WWE, took those titles. And how are you going to get it away from them? You know, you don't look at Gallows and Anderson and think, the minute they defend those titles, they're going to lose them. They lose every other match. No. You look at Gallows and Anderson going, it's going to be a real challenge to get the titles away from those two monsters. And when they came out later in the evening and got involved in the physical altercation that was going on the stage, you didn't sit there going like, oh, the job squad is here to protect the main eventers. You said, these are two massive bad guys. Realistically, they've entered into that conversation that was reserved for Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre, and Baron Corbin. There's been a real refresh that has happened in the last 3 weeks and is still happening. It feels refreshing, and I think it's good for everybody involved. You know, not only do you have the Good Brothers winning the tag team titles, thus adding credibility, you have them being showed effectively being credible, and AJ Styles, you know, excuse me, AJ Styles, I was critiquing him a lot a couple of months ago. And you remember on the kickoff show, I sat down in front of AJ Styles and I said, you went from being the WWE champion to fighting for the WWE championship to talking about the WWE championship. What happened? He spent a period of time in no man's land. AJ Styles was trudging through the murky banks of parts unknown. He almost became obsolete, quite frankly. But in the last month or so, getting back together with the Good Brothers, getting the U.S. title around his waist, having him become, you know, a villain, you've completely given him a refresh. I get very excited every time I see him. He's got a whole new story behind him. And the AJ Styles of old, the one that I said at one point was potentially the best wrestler in the world, that AJ Styles is back in a big way. And it makes me excited. So the OC, which I don't love the name, but the OC winning the tag team title just really drove all that home for me on Monday. And as I watched them throughout the show, I said, this is so cool. It's really, really working. And it almost makes you wonder why you didn't stick with this from the beginning. But I'm okay. Because now when we look at it, you'll have, you know, the club run that AJ Styles had, the beat up John Cena era. You'll have AJ Styles' legendary run as WWE champion, in my opinion. And then you're going to skip right forward to this part where it was AJ Styles, member of the OC. I thought it was just terrific. I actually thought Raw and SmackDown were both pretty good. One of the more controversial moments of SmackDown, though, would be story number two. And that is, of course, the near death of Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns almost suffered a fate similar to that of Mr. McMahon following McMahon's Millions as he was walking to the interview set to give an interview to Kayla Braxton. And as he's walking, the set falls on him. And I thought crushed him to death. Luckily, it was a near miss and he was able to walk away. Roman Reigns is okay. The people are wondering who did it. Clearly, it was Rikishi. And when asked why, he did it for The Rock. Now, look, I love that this happened. I love when it gets wacky. You know, I love the soap opera stuff. I love the idea that we're going to have Roman Reigns almost crushed to death. I think it's a great idea. When spectacular things like that happen, I think it's great. I don't know about all the execution of it. I'm not 100% sure why Roman was able to get back up, why he wouldn't just stay laying down, or why he didn't listen to Kayla Braxton when she was like, Roman, Roman, Roman. And then finally the thing falls down over him. But regardless of how it was executed, it does at least leave me interested. Now,
you know, SummerSlam has only had really a 3-week build. And I'm assuming that next week we're going to find out who dumped the stuff on Roman. And that's how you're going to set up the SummerSlam match. If it were me, when you pull off a stunt like this, whether the execution is perfect or not, I would say try to flesh it out a little bit. If it were me, what I would love to see happen is Roman Reigns blames Samoa Joe. A lot of people were chanting, Joe, Joe, Joe. We just saw the altercation on Monday Night Raw. Roman Reigns calls out Samoa Joe and says, me and you at SummerSlam, I'm going to get back at you for what you did to me. And then Joe says, you have no idea what you're in for. Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe have their match. Roman Reigns wins. He's celebrating. He's headed to the back. He puts his hands up on the stage. And one of the big rigs comes down from the ceiling and almost crushes him. Whoever pushed that thing over onto Roman Reigns is still trying to throw big metal objects on him. And he's going, what in the world is happening? Samoa Joe is still laid out in the middle of the ring. I just beat him because I thought he's the one that tried to commit manslaughter on me. But it must have been somebody else. And I'll tell you why I would do that. Because I feel like a stunt that is that big. Not that it's the biggest stunt in the world, but it's something, right? It's not like he just interfered in a match and cost him the match. When a stunt is going to be followed with one show to build to a pay-per-view match. You know, when you do a stunt 2 weeks before a pay-per-view and you're leading to a match at that pay-per-view, I think the stunt's got to be small. I think the stunt was enough and created enough foundation that we can go further with this. And I think that after SummerSlam is when we should find out that Daniel Bryan has been behind it the whole time. And I think it'd be really cool to spend the fall, basically from SummerSlam, post-SummerSlam, all the way maybe up until Survivor Series, I would love to see a Daniel Bryan-Roman Reigns rivalry. Maybe you don't even get to the match. I'd say, look, I'm going full fantasy here. But I would love for maybe we don't even find out that it was Daniel Bryan right after SummerSlam. But within a few weeks, we start getting hints of it. Roman Reigns maybe has a match with Eric Rowan at the September pay-per-view at Clash of the Champions. And then finally, in October, we get the Daniel Bryan match with Roman Reigns. And the big blow, and then we have a rematch at Survivor Series in November. And that's a cage match, or it could be cool to be a cage match. But some kind of a specialty match where it's the ultimate blow off. But I think it'd be cool for Daniel Bryan's ultimate, you know, career altering announcement to be, I'm going to end Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns has been the big dog, whatever. My career altering announcement, once I end Roman Reigns, the person who stole the Royal Rumble from me, is supposed to be my year, the year Roman Reigns won. He stole the Royal Rumble from me, and he spent the next 4 or 5 years stealing my spot. I was the popular one. I was the one the fans wanted. I was the one who physically was capable of all of it. But the front office picked Roman Reigns. So now I'm going to end him once and for all. I will never get to where I need to be in the WWE unless Roman Reigns is done. On July 30th, on SmackDown, I tried to end Roman Reigns. At this pay-per-view in October, I'm going to end him for good. It was me, Roman. It was me all along. Get to the match with Samoa Joe, and Samoa Joe doesn't have to deny it, but he also doesn't have to take credit for it. And we all just kind of assume that Joe did it. Until something else falls on Roman Reigns after he beats Samoa Joe. And within a couple weeks, we find out it was Daniel Bryan. Roman Reigns fights Eric Rowan at the next pay-per-view. October match with Daniel Bryan. Maybe Rowan interferes and Daniel Bryan gets the victory. November, we get some kind of a stipulation, maybe a cage match. And that's when Roman can beat Daniel Bryan and start heading towards the Royal Rumble. That's the way I would have it. You know what I mean? I would say, you know, whether you thought this was a hokey moment or not, allow it to be the foundation for something. Because here's the thing. Like, just because a moment is hokey, and by the way, like, you're talking to the wrong guy, okay? Because I loved the McMahon's Millions thing. The Vince McMahon blows up in a limo is one of my favorite things that's ever happened. I was locked into the who is Mr. McMahon's son mystery. Wasn't thrilled that Hornswoggle was the answer, but I was locked in, okay? All this soap opera drama, over-the-top ridiculousness, that's where Sam's a Viking. I love it. It's for Sam's a Viking Raider. But, and maybe that's why I think this should be stretched out, not just, you know, I'd be disappointed if on Monday or Tuesday, the person who did it, like Samoa Joe goes, yeah, I did it, and then they have a match at SummerSlam, and then they just move on past it, you know? I think the way, like, Roman Reigns was so shook up, this it felt like it was supposed to be a bigger deal than, you know, 1 week of storyline. And in my scenario, you can have that moment on July 30th take you through November. But that's just the way I would do it. I love it. He challenges Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe accepts the challenge. He never says he did it. He just accepts the challenge. He beats Samoa Joe. Something else falls on him. He doesn't know who did it. He has a match with Eric Rowan at the pay-per-view. We're starting to figure out who did it. He beats Eric Rowan, only for Daniel Bryan to come in and try to end him. And the SmackDown after Clash of Champions is when Daniel Bryan can finally do his promo about how he's here to end Roman Reigns. And if it wasn't for Roman Reigns, he would be the number one person in WWE. Story number one this week, we go back to Monday Night Raw. Because, you know, I say a lot that one of the most important things that you can do on a wrestling show is get people talking about it who normally might not talk about it. And two things were brought up to me. You know, I'm the last professional broadcaster. When I travel in social circles, people know I'm a wrestling guy. People on the street know that I'm a wrestling guy. In New York City? Come on. But people have come up to me and they've talked about two things. They've talked about Cedric Alexander jumping off the Raw stage, and they've talked about the beatdown that Brock Lesnar gave Seth Rollins. I thought both those segments, I thought the end of Raw this week was incredible. I think that the job they've done with Cedric Alexander is so commendable. It's so great. And I loved the beatdown that Seth Rollins took at the hands of Brock Lesnar. It felt real. It got people talking. It got people interested. It got people motivated. That's why I think that Paul Heyman is being allowed to put more energy into Monday Night Raw. Not because, you know, Paul Heyman is creative and Vince McMahon is not. I think that's half true. I think Paul Heyman is incredibly creative. I think Vince McMahon is too. But I think Booker T was right. That sometimes it's very, very difficult to see your product from the outside if you are deep, deep, deep on the inside. And I think Paul Heyman at this point may have a firmer grasp on the fan base that exists outside of Titan Towers. And that's the sense that I got watching Raw this week. I got the beginning of what I think is going to be a pretty great season for WWE headed into the fall and then into the winter, you know? A season where you're actually elevating people. I felt like Seth Rollins, it added a lot to him to have him get beat down. You know, the question, people are going like, well, are they going to replace him at the pay-per-view? I don't think that they are. You know, I think that this was just done to maybe build up some sympathy for the guy. And I think it was effective. And when you got a good guy who's a straight good guy, sympathy is not the worst thing in the world for him, especially in a match with Brock Lesnar. It's just a reminder that Brock Lesnar is a dangerous, dangerous man.
I don't think Seth Rollins is going to beat Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. In fact, I'd go back to my quote from WrestleMania and say Seth Rollins has about a 0% chance of beating Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. And the reason I say that is because we saw Seth Rollins got the snot kicked out of him on Monday Night Raw. I love it. It got people talking. It was interesting and it felt real. You know, that big melee, it makes the Usos and it makes the Good Brothers look like main event players. And it makes Cedric Alexander look like this breakout star, putting him in the position that he was in when he did that superhuman jump off the top of the Raw Titantron. I'm giving it my number one story of the week because I thought that the end of Raw and the Seth Rollins Brock Lesnar beatdown segment on Raw were such strong segments, not just in and of themselves, but in the foundation that they laid. That if you go back, and I went back and watched like the last hour or so of Raw on my DVR, and I really got this feeling of like, okay, for the first time in a long time, I see where this is going. I see what the future looks like, and it looks good. I feel like the right people are in the right positions. And keep in mind, Drew McIntyre is still over here messing with Kevin Owens. Keep in mind, Baron Corbin is still around. Lacey Evans is still around. All this stuff is still happening. I felt good coming off of Raw this week, and I felt decent coming off of SmackDown this week. Good stuff all around. Hey, guys, thank you again for being a part of the State of Wrestling. We do it each and every week here on Not Sam Wrestling. Don't forget, if you want to catch the video version of the State of Wrestling every single week, or if you want to watch State of Wrestling live every single week as I record it, or if you just want to get the podcast early, sign up to our Patreon, patreon.com/NotSamWrestling. For less than a dollar a week, you can get the podcast early and ad-free. You can get all our bonus shows. A little bit more, you get all the videos early. You get State of Wrestling on video every single week. Little more, you'll get all the live video shows that we do for Patreon, plus everything I've already said, plus you'll be able to watch State of Wrestling live. A little more, you'll get free tickets to all our live events and free merchandise as well that's exclusive to the Patreon page. A lot of people getting Not Sam jackets right now that you can only get by being a Hall of Fame level Not Sam shill at patreon.com/NotSamWrestling. We will have an announcement to make about a live event very soon. We're not doing a live event in Toronto around SummerSlam weekend, which is mainly because I don't know any venues in Toronto well enough. I haven't spoken to any venues. That's pretty much what it is. But I am in the planning stages for another live event coming up very, very soon. So stay tuned for that. Appreciate the listen. Appreciate the stream. Appreciate the download. I will see you next week here on Not Sam Wrestling. Toodaloo, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Follow at Not Sam on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Rate, review, and subscribe. This has been Not Sam Wrestling.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.